This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Maybe a little extra in your paycheck.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. As if we haven't had enough bonus business to talk about lately, there's more. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that Citibank is asking the Treasury Department for permission to pay out retention bonuses to certain employees. As Marketplace's Steve Henn tells us, Citi's worried if it doesn't, some of its most profitable businesses could fall apart.
Phibro isn't a household name, but last year this little division inside Citigroup made hundreds of millions of dollars trading commodities. Pete Hahn is a former Citi executive who's now at the Cass School of Business in London.
Gold, grain, oil, you name it. And this is an area in Citi that's doing quite well.
The head of Phibro, Andrew Hall, took home close to $100 million last year. But now that the feds have a $50 billion stake in Citi, paydays like that are politically unpalatable. Hahn says it makes sense for Citi to keep Hall happy and keep Phibro intact, but government pay caps are a problem.
These individuals are generating large profits, and frankly, that's going to help the share price and help repay taxpayers.
Citi's reportedly asking to pay top executives like Hall stock bonuses that would vest over the next 3 years, and in some cases could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
We're likely to get another weak GDP report in a few hours. According to some analysts, the economy probably shrank at a 5% clip in the first quarter of the year. That number isn't exactly bubbly, but those same economic experts admit that the last GDP report from the final 3 months of last year was a lot weaker, 6.3%, and that barring the unexpected, we may be seeing a bottom to this global financial fallout. Markets pretty much flat yesterday. Everybody, Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P off just a fraction of a percent. European shares are up by a percent or more today. Asian markets closed mostly up. The Hang Seng added more than 2.5%. The Nikkei was closed for a holiday in Japan. There's that whole thing about elephants never forgetting. But Republicans have been trying to put the past 2 years behind them. What with losing Congress in 2006, losing the White House back in November, and just yesterday they lost Arlen Specter, the senior senator from Pennsylvania, all to Democrats. So on this 100th day of President Barack Obama's administration, and amidst their complaints that there isn't much bipartisanship from the other side, let's talk a moment about the grand old party and its identity going forward. Will it be as loyal opposition or as the party of no? From Washington, here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
From the budget to health care to equal pay, Republicans have mostly rejected Democrats' ideas this year. But Washington policy analyst Tom Gallagher at the ISI Group says the GOP is out of step with voters and facing a tough decision.
Do you return to your roots, the small government roots of the party, or do you seek somebody who can accommodate the public's desire for more activist policies on things like the environment or health care?
Meantime, Republicans and Democrats aren't working together. And the result, says Greg Casey of the Business Industry Political Action Committee, will be more stalemate unless others step into the breach.
For instance, the business community gets the fact that we have to resolve the issue of health care. People are going to step up and try to come up with some plan that does that. It's not going to be the liking of the conservatives or the liberals.
But Casey says it might be something that works. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Producemore, conservemore.com. and by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
The Centers for Disease Control says there are at least 5 dozen cases of swine flu across the United States. No deaths officially reported in this country, but south of the border in Mexico, that number is creeping toward 160. And as worldwide cases multiplied this week, stocks took a dive. Shares of airlines plummeted. Pork producers saw a drop in sales. Economists worry about the outbreak's added drag to the fallout. But on this one, Marketplace commentator Robert Reich says we should all forget the business angle.
Many are deeply worried about what a swine flu pandemic could do to the already weakened U.S. economy. I understand their worry, but it strikes me as misplaced. The real worry is that lots of people could get sick and many could die. Thinking about a pandemic as an economic crisis assumes there's something called an economy whose health can be separated from the well-being of real people. It's like viewing the financial meltdown as a crisis for Wall Street measured in how low the Dow sinks when millions of people are losing their jobs, their savings, and their homes. In the end, an economy is nothing but people. If vast numbers of people are doing well, the economy should be judged a success. If many people are hurting, the economy is failing. Health is a big factor. The budget resolution that just emerged from a House-Senate conference fast-tracks universal health insurance, which means the upcoming bill won't be subject to a possible filibuster. This maneuver upsets those who believe the country cannot afford universal health insurance, even though we now have the most costly, inefficient, and inequitable system of health care in the world. Opponents of reform believe it will harm the economy. But if you think of the American economy as 300 million people, 44 million of whom are not insured, and many others who can barely hold on to the insurance they have, the question is not whether the economy can afford universal health insurance, but whether we Americans can continue to bear the cost of not having it. If in the months ahead we're unfortunate enough to find ourselves in the midst of a dangerous pandemic, I doubt our main concern will be its effect on the Dow or the GDP. We'll concern ourselves with how to protect those who are most vulnerable to it and how to care for those who have contracted the disease. We do well to focus on these questions right now and stay focused on how to make and keep Americans healthy.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.